Starting this up? Okay. Morning, everyone. Sorry for the late start. We had to fix up the technology so people can watch online. Because as we've been saying, right now during this time, we must learn more, not less. Daven harder, not weaker. So we're going to keep learning here or online. And today we're going through the parasha. So this parasha is Vayakol Pekudei. Special Shabbos, the Shabbos, because it's number one Chazak, which means we finished the second book of Shmos, right? Second book of the Chumash, I mean, Shmos, the book of Exodus. Also, we have it's a double parasha, Vayakol and Bekudei together, and also we have the last of the four special parashas, so it's Parashas HaChodesh, right? The last of the four, which is the mitzvah Korban Pesach and so on and so forth. Okay, so Vayakol Pekudei is an interesting parasha because it's a repeat. It's very little Rashi. It's a long parasha, but very little Rashi. Why? Because it's really a repeat of the parasha of Terumah and Tetzaveh. Terumah and Tetzaveh is when Hashem asked the Moshe Rabbeinu to tell the Bnei Yisrael to build a Mishkan. He gave them all the instructions, what they have to donate, what they have to make, the clothes they have to design, and so on. And then Vayakol Pekudei is Moshe Rabbeinu comes back, he tells the Jewish people, and it's a description of how they did it. Now normally the Torah doesn't repeat things like that in such detail. It does with the Mishkan, just to show you how important the Mishkan is. So, before I start, I'm just going to share with you a little vort actually. Nothing to do with the parasha, but it is somewhat to do with the parasha, which I saw yesterday. From a rabbi in Baltimore. A beautiful, beautiful idea. And an idea which is very relevant now. So the rabbi is a rabbi in Baltimore. There's been a very bad outbreak of corona there. And as a result, they closed all the shuls, all the schools, all the hadorim, everything. No minyanim, nothing. So everyone's now at home in that community. So he spoke on the just after the last morning minyan that they had. He was actually quite upset. You could see he was even emotional. But he said a beautiful word. He said he wants to share with everyone a word from the Kedushas Levi, Levi Yitzchak Barditchev. And he said that the Gemara tells us, Chazal tells us, that when Mashiach comes, Asidin Botei Knesias, all the shuls and all the places of learning are going to be physically uplifted and transported to Eretz Yisrael and become part of the Beis HaMikdash, a part of the system there in Eretz Yisrael, right? To be all be transferred to the land of Israel. So Levi Yitzchak Barditchev says, not only is it going to be the Beis HaMikdash, the shuls, but also the Jewish homes. Jewish homes also. Why? So he continues and he says, because after all, what do you do in a shul? You daven, right? Davening is a rabbinic mitzvah. You say Shema, okay, that's more biblical mitzvah. There's a few mitzvahs you do in a shul, critical mitzvahs, important to do in a minyan, with a tzibur, but they're rabbinic mitzvahs. He says, at home you do many more mitzvahs. He says, at home you have a mezuzah, which is a biblical mitzvah. You bench, which is a biblical mitzvah. After you eat, a biblical mitzvah. You learn Torah, you have svarim. You do many, many more Jewish life, sanctity, purity, whatever the case is. There's many, many more mitzvahs that you do at home, right? So the rabbi's message to his community, he says, now we're entering a time where people are going to spend more time at home than in shul. He says, but maybe it's Mashiach is coming soon. Not maybe, the Mashiach is coming soon. But he says, maybe the idea is now we have to prepare our homes to be transported. So we have to make sure that our home is turned into the shul. So the Mishkan is the same thing. The Mishkan is a place where Hashem said that everyone should build a Mishkan. We know that shuls are called Mikdash Ma'at. They're called mini sanctuaries, mini temples. But we know the famous Pasuk in Parshas Terumah when the Mishkan all began, which says, V'shachanti b'soichom, I will dwell in them. In them, it doesn't say I'll dwell in it, I'll dwell in them. And Chazal tell us it means b'soich kol echad v'echad, Hashem will dwell among every single person, which really means, and the Rebbe used to talk about this a lot, about changing every home into a Mishkan. Every home should be a Mishkan, right? So that's a good word for this parasha. So now we have to turn our homes more than ever into places of a Mikdash, a Beis HaMikdash, a Mishkan. Yeah. Oh, so that's a general concept. So community is a very important thing, right? Community, everything's right? Sorry? Oh, gosh, okay. Oh, did you send it to me?
Yeah, I just sent you a new one.
Oh, okay, 1 second. Sorry about that. We're trying to take a quick break because the YouTube link was a problem. Just 1 second. Sorry. Give me 1 second. Sorry, I'll answer your question. I'm just going to copy and then send it to this one. Okay, all good. Melanie, your question is a very good question in general. It's a very fundamental question. And very central. No. Let me address it. It's a very central question to Yiddishkeit in general. So shuls are important. First of all, there's a mitzvah of the minyan, the Torah reading. And you're right. Shuls play a very, very important contribution in terms of community, right? Community, because that's what's so unique about the Jewish people. You know, people get together, community, etc. But on the other hand, it's actually a fundamental mistake to think that shuls are the headquarters of Yiddishkeit, because they're not. The home is the headquarters. The home is the headquarters. The real Beis Hamikdash is in the home, generally, besides the current situation that we're in. But really, it is like that. I grew up with a very devout mother. You know my mother. And when we grew up, she went to shul 3 times a year. She used to call herself a 3-day Jew. 3-day, what do you call 3-day? 3-day year Jews. She never went to shul. She davened a lot. She said tons of tilim, but she's very frum, very devout, but never went. But went to, now she goes to shul more often when she's, you know, but okay. So what I want to do today is do something on the first part of the parsha of Vayakhel, and then something at the very end of Pekudei, and it's on your copies on either side. So if you look at the side of Vayakhel, let's learn a little bit the first few psukim. So it says,
"By." Today is
Joel's English birthday. Oh wow! Okay, well, you do it in his honor then. Okay, so let's say it's page 516 on that one page where it says 516 on the top. Torah reads the following. Torah says, "Vayakel Moshe," and Moshe gathered. It's called Adas B'nei Yisrael. All the Jewish people of B'nei Yisrael. Rashi says this was when he came down from the mountain. This was the day after Yom Kippur. Vayomer aleim, and he said to them, Eile hadvarim, these are the things which Asher tziva Hashem lasus oisa. These are the things that Hashem commanded to do. And as we've often talked about, Moshe Rabbeinu prefaces the mitzvah of building a Mishkan with Shabbos. And he says, Sheishes yomim te'osim alocha, 6 days work shall be done. Vayomer Ashvi on the 7th day, yilachem kodesh, it will be holy Shabbos, Shabbosin la Hashem. Kol oisa boi malocha yumas, whoever will be punished when they want to intentionally desecrate Shabbos and so on. And then it says, Lo yisavaru eish b'chol moish v'seichem, you should not burn fire wherever you are, b'yom ha-Shabbos, a day of Shabbos. And then he goes on to talk about the Mishkan. So it's interesting because we know that there are 39 prohibited activities on Shabbos, and only 2 of them are actually mentioned explicitly in the Torah. One of them is not to make fire, right? So I saw a little funny vort that why does it single out not to make fire on Shabbos? So he brings over here in the Sefer, he says that Shabbos is a day of rest and everyone is free. Problem is that when everyone is free, you get around the table. What happens sometimes around the Shabbos table, instead of making it meaningful, everyone's got time. So it's a good time to talk Lashon Hara about the Rav, about the Chazan, about the Gaba, about the President, about everyone else, right? So it says, the Torah says you should keep Shabbos, but lo yisavaru eish, don't make machloikas, don't fire up things on Shabbos that are negative. Make the Shabbos meaningful. It's time a nice little part. Okay. Another interesting word of why the Torah singles out fire that I saw in the name of the Tiferes Yonason, he says the following. You know, there's the first Luchos, the first Ten Commandments, and the second Ten Commandments. The first Ten Commandments, the Torah emphasized that Shabbos is to remember the creation of the world that took place in 6 days, right? And Shabbos is rested. Second tablets, it mentions more about the remembering going out of Mitzrayim, right? So the problem with the first tablets is that if we would only look at the first Luchos and understand that Shabbos is for the 6 days of creation, we might actually think that that doesn't include making a fire. Because making a fire actually only happened after 6 days of creation. You know the whole story that when Adam HaRishon was created, there was this primordial light that Adam HaRishon had, everything was there was no darkness. Then they sinned, Then the light continued to serve for the whole of Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos, Adam and Chava got kicked out of Gan Eden. Suddenly it was dark. Adam HaRishon didn't know what to do, so that's when he discovered that if you take two flintstones and you put them together, you can create fire, which is why we make a bracha on the Havdalah candle on Matzah Shabbos. Yeah? Well, now we know. That's what we learn. Because when do we bless Hashem for creating the light of the fire? We do it on Matzah Shabbos, because that's when it happened. Right? That's when it happened. So we might think that since the first Luchos emphasizes the whole reason we keep Shabbos is Kisheshes Yomim, because in 6 days Hashem created the world, and the seventh day He rested. So I'm not thinking it's only to do with things that happened during the creation of the world, but things that have to do with fire, which happened on Motzei Shabbos after the 6 days of creation, is not included in Shabbos. That's why the Torah singles out Loisavai Reish. Yeah, okay. But I want to just sort of also share with you something that the Ishbitzer says on this, and he says the following. He says, why is it so important for Moshe Rabbeinu to talk about Shabbos before we build a Mishkan? Right? So he says like this. 6 days of the week is when we build a Mishkan. That's when we create. During the week is a time of doing. That's each one creates. We create the Mishkan for Hashem, so to speak, right? And we all do stuff. We all create generally during the 6 days of the week. We're creating, we're accomplishing, we're doing, right? Everyone does it differently. Everyone has different jobs to do during the week. Everyone has a different way of doing things, right? But how do you know if you do it right? How do you know? You might be doing it differently to your friend. So how do you know? This is essentially what he says. Hey, have a seat over here. Thanks. How do we know if we're doing it in a way, number one, that we're not being divided from other people? Right? And how do we know that we actually are doing it our own way, but we're doing it right? The answer is a common goal. Common goal. When you have a common goal, a common purpose, then when you each do something different, you're actually united because you're doing it right. Right? And essentially, you end up doing the same thing. You might be doing it a different way, but you end up doing it the same thing. Whatever we're doing during the week, right? Whatever we're doing, we're supposed to be doing it to serve Hashem, right? But how do we serve Hashem during the week? By doing. This one's a plumber, this one's a doctor, this one's cooking, this one's baking. Whatever we're doing, right? Whatever we're riding, we're running, I don't know. Everyone's doing different things, right? And the different things can also divide people. It can create jealousy, create division, disunity. I'm doing it better than you, you're doing it better than me. I'm jealous of you, you're jealous of me. Whatever the case is, right? There's so much stuff that can go wrong in what everyone does differently, but it won't go wrong if we all do it for the same purpose. That purpose is Shabbos. Shabbos is when everything stops and we focus on the purpose. So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu comes and says, listen, I'm about to tell you to build a Mishkan. But building a Mishkan is different talents, different skills, everything's going to do it, everyone's going to do it differently. How are you going to all do it together and do it correctly? Before I start, let me tell you, Sheshes Yomim, 6 days you do. 6 days you're going to build a Mishkan, but don't forget about the seventh day. The seventh day is the goal of the Mishkan. The common purpose is Shabbos. And when you do it focused on a common purpose, you all do it correctly, you all do it united, and you all do it with the purpose in mind and the way it should be done. Right? He says, like, tells a story in Megillah, a famous story. There was a story with Talmai HaMelech. Talmai HaMelech was a... How do you say it in English? Ptolemy, well, how do you pronounce him? Ptolemy, yeah. Greek, yeah, it was Greek, yeah. So he gathered 72 elders and he put them in different rooms, right? And he said, translate the Torah. There's a Latin or Greek word for Septuagint, what's it called in English? Septuagint or something, whatever, yeah. So they I never did Greek or Latin or any of these things in school, it's not my forte. So he put them in a room and he said they all have to translate the Torah. By the way, this was considered a very, very big tragedy because it was considered, even though now translation is a very good thing, it makes Torah learning accessible, then it was considered a bad thing because it wasn't necessary and it was taking away from the holiness of Torah. And also things get lost in translation, right? And they also had a big problem because if you translate certain things directly and literally from the Torah, you end up with certain translations that could lend itself to heresy if you don't understand it properly, right? So each one decided they're going to make some changes. Now that's a very dangerous thing, because if you have them all in one room, you can imagine about them not agreeing, right? But if you have them in different rooms, like the outcome could be completely different, right? So they each went one into a different room. They were in social isolation, not because of the coronavirus, but because that's what Talmud, they wanted to see if they're all going to come up with the same thing. They all made, I've forgotten the number of changes, but they all made the identical changes. Identical. Each one. Identical changes. Right? I don't remember them offhand now. I didn't look up the Gemara, but I know one of them, for example, is Bereshis Bara Lakim. Right? So, how we transpiration in the beginning, or the beginning created Hashem. They changed it to Elokim Bara Bereshis. God created the beginning. Not to sound like there was something that created God. Because if you translate Bereshis, then you have Bara Elokim created, Hashem created. You can read it as Bara Elokim, it, Bereshis, whatever Bereshis is, Bara Elokim created God, God forbid, right? So they all changed it to Elokim Bara Bereshis. And such changes like that. And look at exactly the same thing. He says, why? Because when you do something and you realize you're doing it for a purpose, and you focus on what Hashem wants, you end up doing the right thing. Had they did it with their own, if they just focus on their own skill of translation, and each one wanted to come up with the best translation they come out, they're all going to come up with totally different things, it'll be a disaster. They all focus on the same thing, they all came out the same thing. But he says, even with us, that we do different things, but we focus on the same thing, we come up with the same result. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu starts off with Sheishes Yomim Tasa Malacha. First of all, remember the Shabbos. Shabbos is the common goal. Shabbos is when everyone stops doing things that are different and focuses on the same thing. We have the same parsha, the same Suda Shabbos, same Shabbos meal, and so on. But right, there's Miris, the davening. But we focus on the goal. And then if you focus on the goal, then during the week you'll do it the right way. A very beautiful idea. Okay, that's an idea on the beginning of the parasha. Now, let's go to the end of the parasha. Okay, if you turn over the page, right, go to the part which says 538. Let's have a look at a pas. A pas says like this. I'm going to share with you a beautiful explanation from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in one of his talks about the whole conclusion of the Mishkan. Don't forget, it's interesting because next week we're coming up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This week is another reason why the Shabbos is so special, is Shabbos Mevorchim. Right? Shabbos Mevorchim. So this Thursday a week is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan was actually the day the Mishkan was finally erected properly, right? So it all sort of fits into the parasha. Let's have a look at the pasuk says. Vayehi b'chodesh harishon, it was in the first month. First month meaning Nisan. B'shana hasheni, in the second year. B'echad l'chodesh, in the first of the month. Remember, just to get the history right. This is 1 year minus 2 weeks after the Jews leave Egypt, right? 1 year minus 2 weeks. Yeah? The Mishkan was established. The Mishkan was put up. Yeah? Then it says, Vayokom Moshe. Vayokom Moshe sa Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu put up the Mishkan. Vayitenes Adonov, he made its sockets, Vayosimus Krushov, the beams, Vayitenes Brichov, the bolts, Vayokimus Amudov, and he put up the pillars, and so on and so forth. Who put up the Mishkan? Moshe Rabbeinu put up the Mishkan, right? Okay. So now it's like this. The Medrash says, Rashi brings in a different place, but the Medrash says the following. You see, it says, Hukam HaMishkan, the Mishkan was put up. Why doesn't it say they put up the Mishkan? Doesn't say, it says that it was put up. Yeah? So it sounds like it just got up itself. It's like, right? It got erected itself. Why, says the Medrash? Because that's true. Because the Yidden were unable to do it. It was much too heavy. It was a very, very heavy thing. Right? They had to what, sorry? This was a year and minus 2 weeks after they left Egypt. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'll explain to you. They actually did a practice run for 7 days before. But this was the time they did it, and the Shekhinah, the divine presence, revealed itself. Okay. Now, not only that, the next pasuk says, "Vayokum Moshe." Moshe Rabbeinu put it up. Says the Medrash, and Rashi brings it down. No, what happened was like this: even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't put it up himself. I mean, this was huge. I mean, they were 10 amas high, 5 meters high. They were huge, huge, huge beams, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't put it up. Said Hashem. So Hashem said to Moshe. So in other words, that creates a contradiction between this pasuk and the next pasuk. The first pasuk says, "Hukam Mishkan." The Mishkan was put up, which means like Hashem put it up, but just stood up on its own. Next pasuk says, "Vayokum Moshe." What happened was like this: Moshe Rabbeinu, it looked like he was putting up, because Hashem said to him, "Asoik biyotcha, you put it, you like get busy, and it'll look like you putting it up, but I'm going to put it up actually, but it'll look like you putting it up, and that's why the pasuk is going to say, "Vayokum Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu put it up." Well, okay. So the question is, before, and also talks about it later in the Chumash, this was all talking about the first of Nisan. So we have the first of Nisan, that's when the Mishkan was put up properly, that's when Hashem revealed himself, later on in Yikra talks about it, beautiful. Inauguration of the Mishkan. Big chidush, big amazing thing. Actually, Hashem put it up because it was too heavy. Moshe Rabbeinu just looked like he was putting it up. And that's how it worked. So, Hukam HaMishkan, the Mishkan was put up, but really, no one really put it up. It was just Moshe Rabbeinu representing Hashem, really. It looked like Moshe Rabbeinu was putting it up, but it's actually Hashem putting it up. Okay? The problem is, we know from elsewhere in Chumash, that from the 23rd of Adar, right? 23rd of Adar, there were 7 days called the Shiva Simei HaMiluim. There were 7 preparation days where the Mishkan was put up and taken down every single one of those 7 days. And that was the 7 days where we read about that Moshe Rabbeinu was like a Kohen. And Moshe Rabbeinu trained Aaron and his sons to bring the Karbonis and the sacrifices. Practice run. The Shechina, the Divine Presence Taka, didn't reveal itself those 7 days. The fire didn't come down from heaven, that's true, because it wasn't properly set up. It was just a practice. But it was put up every single day. So who put it up? I thought Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to do it. It doesn't say anywhere that Hashem did it himself. This is only the first of Nisan. So what happened? Right? Now, there's different reasons why it was actually put up all seven days. You see, it's interesting that the Torah doesn't say anywhere it needed to be put up for the 7 days. So the Ramban has a certain explanation. Let's go with Rashi's explanation for now. Rashi actually holds that what happened was that actually, from Rashi it comes out that actually there wasn't a commandment to put it up. The only thing was like this. There was a commandment that during the 7 days, right, Moshe Rabbeinu had to train the Kohanim to bring sacrifices and to do all the rituals in the Mishkan. That is true. So Moshe Rabbeinu understood, well, how can you train them if there's no Mishkan? In other words, the explicit commandment in the Torah was just to train the Kohanim. It wasn't to put up the Mishkan. There was no putting up of the Mishkan officially during those 7 days. The official putting up of the Mishkan was the first of Nisan. Moshe Rabbeinu understood, however, right, that you have to put it up during the 7 days, because otherwise how am I supposed to train the Kohanim? There's an explicit commandment to train the Kohanim. I can only do it if there's a Mishkan there. I can show them what to do. There's a Mizbeach. I can show them how to bring the Karbonis. There's a little Mizbeach. I can tell them which area to go in to bring the Ketores. So obviously I've got to put it up. So they put it up during the 7 days, but it wasn't like the mitzvah putting it up. So the Rebbe learns Pshat, very simple. What happens like this, right? Because the obvious question then is, if Moshe Rabbeinu put it up all 7 days, how could he couldn't do it the first day? The answer is very simple. The answer is, the eighth day was very, very, very special, right? The eighth day was the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That was the day that the Shekhinah came down. That was the day that Hashem wanted to do. Okay. So that was the day that Hashem said, I want to do the job today. I'm coming down. So you're going to pretend like you're putting it up. You are my representative. I'm going to put it up through you. I don't want anyone else to do it. I'm doing it today. Right? Yeah? During the 7 days, there was no such thing. So it's simple. During the 7 days, if you have enough people, you can put it up. During the 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu got help. Doesn't mean he put it up during those 7 days. He got help. You see? Okay. That's the way Rashi, that's what Kamar went to Rashi. He got help. A lot of people together can put up a Mishkan, right? It's not a problem. It was very heavy, it was very big, but if you have enough manpower, you can do it. You know, just a side point. I think I mentioned this when I came back from Israel, but one of the things that's absolutely amazing to look at Israel, the Kosel, even the Kosel itself, if you go more than the Kosel, if you go down to the Kosel tunnels, and now with the new archaeology that you see the stuff that was built so many thousands of years ago that now are being discovered, you wonder, how did they build this, right? I mean, Herod particularly was a master builder. And if you go down to the Kosel and you go to the tour tunnels, you see, I mean, the Kosel itself has big stones, but if you go deeper, you'll see that it's huge stones. I'm estimated to be a ton each. I mean, these stones are unbelievably big. They didn't have trains. Yeah, so they had an amazing system. I mean, it's known what system they used, the Romans. And this was Herod's system of building, right? Not only Besamidish, by the way, other stuff in Israel that Herod built. They had all mechanism with pulleys and wheels, and they schlepped things and so on and so forth, right? What did it have to do? Manpower, that's all it was. He had a lot of people pulling these things. But I mean, okay, he had mechanisms. He was very clever. But with manpower, you can put it up. So it's not a problem. So therefore, the way the Rebbe learns the Rashi is like this. That during the 7 days of Miluim, during the 7 days of practice, there was no formal mitzvah to erect a Mishkan. And in fact, the Shekhinah didn't come down. The entire purpose of erecting the Mishkan during the 7 days was the preparation for the Mishkan to train the Kohanim. To train the Kohanim, you need to have a Mishkan, but it's not a formal putting up of the Mishkan. So whereas we see on the last day, for some reason it's important that when the Mishkan is put up formally, it needs to be done by God himself through Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not important for the first 7 days. So the first 7 days, you got help. So therefore, this whole tumult, this whole explanation, this whole chiddush that we read about at the end, that Moshe Rabbeinu comes and it says, the Torah says that on the first day, Hukama Mishkan, the Mishkan was put up and it wasn't put up by Hashem, and by Yaakov Moshe when it put it up means it looked like you're putting it up and Hashem was helping. That's all got to do with Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's got nothing to do with the first 7 days. First 7 days it was up, but it's not a problem to understand it. He didn't do it himself, he did it with manpower. Okay, now. So what happens? So what we see is an interesting thing here. What we see is like this. That, sorry, I'm just trying to, give me 1 second here so I can just get my bearings right. Okay. So what do we see? We see like this, that the Mishkan had two phases. One is a preparation phase, starting even before the building, right? Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, everyone had to donate and build. Bezalel became the project manager together with Eliyahu. All the participated. Moshe Rabbeinu then puts up the Mishkan during the 7 days with all the other people. And then there's the Mishkan itself which gets erected. So what are we seeing? We're seeing two stages. Preparation stage, that's when everyone had to be involved. Everyone had to be involved. Somehow. Right, the men donated, the women donated, the people participated, there was a mitzvah. And then, by the way, it's the same thing the Rambam explains with regard to the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? The building of the Beis HaMikdash was done through everyone. Everyone had to participate. It was a mitzvah on every single person. Right? In fact, this is again a side issue, but there's a very famous question, I'm not going to go into that, but a very famous discussion in the Rambam. But the Rambam says everyone has to participate, men and women, except for small children learning Torah. Because small children learning Torah keep the world existing. It says that you can't disturb that even for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Otherwise, everyone to get involved. Then a few halachas later, the Rambam says that you don't build the Beis HaMikdash during the nighttime, only during the day and not on Shabbos, which then creates a problem, because how can he say that men and women are obligated, because it becomes a time-bound mitzvah, and a time-bound mitzvah, women are exempt normally. Okay, so all discussion, I'm just bringing it out. But in other words, I'm bringing out this concept that everyone had to be involved. Everyone had to be involved in the preparation stage. And then suddenly comes the actual putting up of the Mishkan on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, where suddenly no one's involved. Hashem puts it up through Moshe Rabbeinu. What are these two stages, right? So to explain on a bit of a deeper level, we have to understand this concept. We have this idea brought down in Hasidic terminology and in Kabbalah and so on, called Isarusa de la Tata, Isarusa de la Eila. Isarusa de la Tata means when we do things on our own initiative. Isarusa de la Eila means when Hashem does things for us. He responds to us, right? Yeah, is that clear? Now, each one of these things has an advantage over the other. How? The advantage in Isarusa de la Tata, as we call it, the awakening from above, we do things, is that we change. We're doing things. We're refining ourselves, right? We're becoming better. That's why we find, for example, that on one hand, a biblical mitzvah is stricter than a rabbinic mitzvah. Yet the Midrash says that Hashem holds dear, He holds precious more the rabbinic mitzvahs. Why? Because rabbinic mitzvahs have this amazing advantage that we're doing it. We're changing. We're elevating ourselves. We're becoming better people because we're training ourselves. We're working on ourselves. We're giving of ourselves, like the Yidden did with the Mishkan, right? Okay. However, we know that we're finite people. We're limited people. So there's only so far we can go. And then when we get Isarusa de la'ela, when we get the response from Hashem, what the job that He does for us, the disadvantage is that we're lacking the initiative that we're taking. We're not doing the work. But the greatness of it is that it's infinitely greater than what we can do on our own. So therefore, the same idea. The first 7 days, or even before the first 7 days, stage one was everyone has to get involved. Why? Because there's an advantage. It's an important part of the process. That everyone should do what they can do. That's the first 7 days. That's why it's not a problem. You can't ask the question, who put up the Mishkan the first 7 days? If Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it on the 8th day, how could do it on the 7th day? No, he didn't do it in the 7 days. Everyone did it in the 7 days. In fact, everyone did it right from the beginning. Everyone got in, stuck in. Everyone prepared for the Mishkan. Because there's a tremendous advantage in doing stuff ourselves. Right? However, when it came to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, suddenly no one could put it up. Why? Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Hashem said, okay, now I'm going to reveal myself. I'm going to do it for you. If I'm going to do it for you, everyone stand back. Everyone stand back, and I'll do it. Right? So, that's the greatness of Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The greatness of Rosh Chodesh Nisan is it's Hashem doing the job. When Hashem does the job, it's infinitely greater than the ability of the human being, and that's reflected in the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to do it. No one was able to do it, because no one can do it. Physically, but not just physically. It's symbolic of no one can do it because now it's Hashem's participation, it's Hashem's initiative, and Hashem's initiative is to take us to a place where we cannot go on ourselves, only He could do it. And if He does it, through Moshe Rabbeinu, but that's Hashem's doing, and He's revealing the Shekhinah here. According, if this is the way Rashi learns, and that's the climax of the Mishkan, where Hashem does it for us, so now we can understand something else that Rashi says somewhere else in the Gemara. There's a famous machlekes, a famous dispute, or apparent dispute, between the Rambam and Rashi, of how the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. Right? Rashi is quite clear, a number of places in the Shas, that the Beis HaMikdash is coming from heaven. It's built already. Just needs to come down. Right? There's a place in Gemara Sukkah where it talks about, it's a whole halacha about doing something in memory of the Beis HaMikdash, or not doing something because in case Mashiach will come. And it comes out from the Gemara says, but hold on a second, Rashi says it's the timing doesn't seem correct. It sounds like it's got to do with Erev Pesach. Right? It almost sounds like it's possible for the first night of Pesach to Mashiach to come, and then the second night, the first day of Pesach, we already have a Beis HaMikdash. Rashi says takes a bit longer to construct, right? Even if you're a good builder. But Rashi says, no, that's not the point. Mashiach comes, Beis HaMikdash comes down, it's all done. Yeah? The Rambam doesn't seem like that. The Rambam looks like, yeah? The Rambam seems like, at least, that when Mashiach comes, it's a process, it's a journey. Rambam's very clear at the end. Rambam's also clear, he has a few chapters at the end dealing with Mashiach's times. Very fascinating few chapters. Rambam says there that there's a lot of unknowns with regard to Mashiach, in other words, in terms of exactly what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. But he details certain halachic things which we accept as part of the process and the journey of how Mashiach will come. And one of the things he says there is the Mashiach will be a person, of course, as we know, it's one of the fundamental beliefs that we have. It'll be a person coming from the house of David, based David, from David HaMelech. He will be a person that will bring the Jewish nation back to tshuva, back to complete service of Hashem. He will be Mekabes Nitcha Yisrael. He will gather the Jewish people together. Yivne Beis HaMikdash, he will build the Beis HaMikdash. And then it'll be a time of utopia, a time of peace. We'll learn Torah and serve Hashem. So it seems like the Rambam that we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Like it's part of Mashiach's initiative. He'll build it. Part of the things that have to happen is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Which almost seems like we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash. You know? So it looks like, one way to explain it is like this, and then I'm going to tell you something that Rebbe says somewhere else, which is fascinating. But it looks like this, that the Rambam seems to emphasize the greatness of what we do, to the point where he learns that even Mashiach comes, we'll build the Beis HaMikdash. We'll build the Beis HaMikdash. And that's got to do with the greatness of what we do for ourselves in terms of becoming better people. Whereas Rashi is saying, no, the ultimate is not what we do. We do is great and has an advantage of what we don't do, but it's just because we do, we're working on ourselves, but the ultimate is Hashem's response. The ultimate is Hashem's going to do for us because that's infinitely greater. Right? Which is interesting because it looks like in this issue, the Ramban follows a bit like the Rambam. And when we talk about the mitzvah of building a Beis HaMikdash, the Ramban's a bit more like Rashi. When we talk about the mitzvah of building Beis HaMikdash, we find two views in the Rishonim about what's the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam actually says, which ties into what he holds about the Beis HaMikdash with Mashiach, the Rambam actually holds, when he talks about building the Beis HaMikdash, he says that it's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. Why? So that we should have a place to bring sacrifices. Other Rishonim say, you have to build the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Yes, you have to bring sacrifices, but why does it build the Beis HaMikdash? What's the ultimate purpose? For the revelation of the Shekhinah. You see both things there? The Rambam is consistent. He's saying that the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is for us to elevate ourselves. That's the bringing of a korban, which fits into what the Rambam says in the laws of Mashiach, that you have to build, that the Mashiach will build the Beis HaMikdash. Because the whole purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is us doing. It's us elevating ourselves. So that's very consistent. However, Rashi and others, they seem to hold the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is the Gilui HaShekhinah, the revelation of the Shekhinah. Ah, of course you have to bring korbanos because you need the input also, but the ultimate is what Hashem does, the revelation of the Shekhinah, which is why on the eighth day of Miluim, that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, no one could put up the Mishkan, only Hashem could do it. And that's why Mashiach comes, same idea, the Beis HaMikdash will come from heaven. Very consistent. However, it's not in this talk, but I'll just add one thing that the Rebbe says somewhere else, which is very, very beautiful. He actually reconciles the dispute. He says, there's a pasuk, and it's not just reconciling the dispute, it symbolizes a very, very important thing. There's a pasuk which says when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it says, Tovu ba'oretz she'oreha, that the gates of the temple were sunk into the ground. Right? So therefore, there's a view that when Mashiach comes, the Beis HaMikdash is going to come from heaven, like Rashi, but without gates, without doors. The doors of the original Beis HaMikdash will then resurface and we'll affix them. We'll put them on. Now there's a halacha relevant to other stuff in the Gemara with regard to ownership and things like that. When you build a door, it's like you built the whole building. Ah. So therefore says the Rebbe, actually it's going to happen both. Both are right. The Rambam and Rashi. Rashi says the Beis HaMikdash will come from heaven. It will, but without doors. We will take the doors and affix it. It'll be like we built it, so it comes from heaven and we built it. Both things are true. Now, what does that mean? Because in many, many, many places it says, when it talks about this concept, and there's many talks that discuss this issue, about the advantage of something that comes from above versus the advantage of something that we do. And very many, many places it's explained that the ultimate is the combination of both. And Mashiach will come, it'll be the ultimate, that we will do, but we'll be able to reach that which normally only Hashem could do for us and we cannot reach on our own. To give you an example, I've given this example before, let me just give you an example. Maybe two examples. One example is important. So, it's the same thing when you teach a student, right? A teacher teaches a student. So there's two ways of teaching. One is you can just spoon feed by rote, just spoon feed information. The other way is you can teach the child to learn on their own. Advantage, disadvantage. So when you spoon feed, you get a lot more done. Any teacher will know that. You walk into a class and you feed information, you'll learn more. But did the student change? No. The student's not a learner, you understand? Then what happens is another teacher says, no, 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 let's take a step back. I'm going to teach the student to learn on their own. Teacher, student learns on their own, they learn a lot slower. But you've created a student who can now learn, right? What's the ultimate goal? That the student, so no question, initially you have to spoon feed, right? Okay, the student has to want to come to class, that's true. That's the student's input. But then initially, no student can come in grade one and just learn how to learn on their own. That doesn't work, right? Even with the best modern methods, it doesn't work. Little children have to be spoon-fed. They have to want to come, so they come, and then you give them something they can't do on their own. Fine. But eventually, you've got to take a step back and tuck and make sure they learn on their own. To such a way, it'll go a lot slower. They'll learn on their own a lot less than you can teach them, but they'll have the skill, and eventually they'll build the skill to learn on their own and to learn as much as you would be able to teach them on their own. Right? The other analogy I've often given is this. Same idea. When you teach a child to walk, right? So a child is born, you push them around a pram. You push around a pram, they go as far and as quick as you can walk. If you go to the shop, he'll get there, the child will get there as fast as you can walk. Then the child takes the first step. It's a big mazel tov, but it's a big pain in the neck because now it takes 100 years to go everywhere because they can't walk. But everyone's happy. Why are they happy? Because the child's walking on their own. What's the goal? For the child to learn to walk slowly, but eventually to walk as fast as I will be able to take them in the pram. Right? Same idea. Same thing. First place, the Mishkan, eventually, yes, they had to have input, they had to want to come, they had to refine themselves. But at that stage, they couldn't do as much on their own, nowhere near what Hashem could give them. Therefore, originally, the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, Hashem says, okay, you've done what you can, now let me do it for you, because I'll do much more than you can reach on your own. Right? But then it says, the second Beis HaMikdash, Hashem stood back a little bit. And let us do it. It wasn't as good, but we were doing it more on our own. Golos is also like that. Golos, Hashem stands back, Hashem is hidden. Shekhinah is not so revealed. We have to work hard on our own. All to get to what? To a place where eventually we'll do on our own as much as Hashem can give us. Which means that's when Mashiach comes, we'll have all of a sudden that ultimate bond, ultimate unification between the above and the below. Which will manifest itself in the Beis HaMikdash coming down, but we putting on the doors. So it's both. It's Hashem revealing Himself at the ultimate, most infinite level, yet at the same time, we're actually able to do it ourselves and reach that level, and it's us doing it, and we take ownership. And that's the Chibur, and that's one way to bring together the Rashi and the Rambam in terms of how the Beis HaMikdash will build. But the way Rashi says it fits into what he says in this week's Parsha, that the eighth day of Nisan, the eighth day of the seventh day period, in other words, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they all stood back and Hashem did it for them. Okay, we'll stop there. Stay safe and stay strong. As I say, stay safe, stay sane, and stay spiritual.